forums of time for public to come before us and address things not on the agenda. So I have three speaker cards. I really want to remind anybody on today's agenda, if you want to speak, please pull out a speaker card and get it to Patty. The first speaker card I have is South Feinberg.
It's something just to provide that outreach and education. education materials and hold workshops, but there's also value in getting out in the field and talking about how water conservation practices can be implemented. So Diane and Henry, all of our staff, are in the process of modifying the grant to make some clarifications about exactly what our objectives are and how it would be implemented. Stakeholder staff tell us that if we can turn around the application and get it back to them within the next week or so, which we intend to do, that then they would agendize the AF for sometime late November. We would be at a hearing at State Board. Our plan would be to have staff as well as our project team come to the State Board hearing and advocate for the whole project, which includes the field visit components and the monitoring.
So if it continues to go forward, it sounds like it's going to be some amendment and supplementation of information through the process, and it has some time to go to the community.
Well, I do want to say the second issue, of course, is the delicate one, but it's hard to describe right or wrong in some of these communities. The community are marijuana growers. I don't know how else to put it. And they have to visit the community. If they're coming toward the community project, I think it is worth an experiment of educating them. And that's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about rates. And there are ways to do it that are pretty safe. And also, if the contractor's willing to take the risk, I would hope the state would perhaps defer to any suggestion.
Education and conservation are the two big aspects. Yeah. I had 40 kids from Ridgeville School on Tuesday at Grizzly Creek. I had kindergarten kids, in with boots, in a very safe, being safe. And they're saying we can't go in the field with adults to study, it's a really critical.
It's a lot of us can go to one of the few groups that doesn't grow and eat at their house, and that's safe. And they have the right numbers for something on. So I think there are ways to finesse it. But
yeah. And I'm not sure if they are aware of it, just two more points to me. People are coming up to water tanks at Bridgeville School and at Dam.
You're right.
But I was kind of thinking it's kind of a critical situation, so we want to be able to get out and inform not only kids, but adults what happens to water.
Well, Sal, I think you also, you raised some great points, and we as a board have discussed this for the past couple of meetings. It's a very topical issue. We certainly supported staff with planning and realizing the staff efforts are right there with you. It sounds like staff continues to work on that. There's a process in play. I think, may I ask that then our next day of the board meeting, I believe, is November 20th. Would you maybe just in either EO report or verbal maybe bring us up to date? And along the way, by the way, we have voiced our support for this process and the recovery process. And grant funding that goes with it. So that remains in play as well. We'll keep our eye on that.
Hold
on to that. So thank you, Steve. Okay. Pat, since you've got yourself at the table, I guess you'll go next. We have Mr. Pat Higgins.
Pat Higgins,
I would imagine on the same topic.
Thank you. I very much appreciate this, Mr. Noren, members of the board. I am the Eau River Recovery Project's volunteer coordinator. Some of you did not see the full presentation on our proposal, but it's one that we worked hundreds of hours on. It has dedicated mission-driven professionals who help implement it. We thank you guys very much for your support, and your staff, the North Coast Regional Board staff, should certainly be commended because it's innovative, it's an approach that can work. But I don't think, quite frankly, I realize within the bureaucracy everybody has to get along, but I have a different view of the progress and impediments to our contract, potential contract. We can't go into the field to collect citizen monitoring data. I've been doing it since 1995. We did it for last year. I've been out there this year. It's too dangerous. We can't do tailgate workshops or send somebody out to consult on water conservation and water pollution prevention. The problems have been clearly identified by your staff because it's too dangerous. we can't get equipment for the students in the Van Dusen to learn how to monitor their watershed, which we want to instill in their culture so we can live up to the Clean Water Act. because the prejudice against it. And then I'll give you catch 22, Joseph Heller's novel. They can't tell whether or not what we're going to do is going to do any good because they won't give us the money to monitor to show that we're fixing the problem. So what we're running into here is that we have political support, like Sal alluded to, Humboldt County Supervisors, the old Russian River Commission, you guys, Six Rivers National Forest, UC Berkeley has said that our scientific approach is valid, small water districts to want to know more about toxic algae. We're filling these niches without a budget right now. But what we're running into is a risk averse. Bureaucracy at the state board level. And they're also saying quite categorically that they're just in doubt that we could say marijuana or do anything because they'd be legally liable and they're consulting with the Attorney General's office. We need your political help. We need the board to, at the state level, we had hoped to be calendared last Tuesday. Instead, we're now going into Thanksgiving. I'm not sure why we need that delay. The river out here was 50 CFS. It almost dried up last week. Expression. But it still doesn't have sufficient water for the salmon to come on. It was in crisis in some places, and in other places it was in remarkably good health. East Branch of the South Fork, Steelhead Creek, Chemise Creek, Upper South Fork, cold water. This year, no water in the water bank. The water in the water bank came from prior years in watersheds that are in good shape. So we've collected all these data with $4,000 from the Rose Foundation, and now we're faced with the prospect that we won't be able to put out reports to compile the data, to share it back with our neighbors, to assess the condition of the river, and we won't have the money, or at least we won't have the ability to go into the field and give people the advice that they need to make the river a better place. We think that this will be highly successful, that while the North Coast Regional staff and your board has vision, that the arguments offered against that project are not rational, and that we meet the criteria of the fine monies because we're going to lessen the need for enforcement, we're going to implement the Clean Water Act and TMDL. And really, it's a situation where I think that this will be exportable to other basins, and it will get, if you don't do this along with enforcement, you may have an adverse reaction. And we're at the end of the crisis. It doesn't seem to be a crisis in Sacramento, but if we don't use this as a teachable moment, we'll go into entrenched bad behavior. So, need your help. Politics, you guys must know somebody on the state board. We'll have more agencies, we'll have more entities. We're going to lobby this because it's not national that we are with the impediments that are being offered at the state board. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you to you, sir. I'm going to speak with Governor Ms. Kristi Wiegel.
Good morning, board and staff. I'm Kristi Wiegel from Elkhorn. I'm representing the residents in Upper Elkhorn. And we are a very big river, but we do have the distinction of being the most sediment-impaired river in California, and all of that sediment, I can speak personally, has come from logging. There isn't anything that goes on above me in the river, but logging. And it's recent logging that is causing us ever-increasing problems. And we all know that we have a WDR that came into effect in 2006. It addressed only one source of sediment, that from landslides. Well, the landslide slid, and we knew that wouldn't be our problem into the future. We stood up as a neighborhood in 2010 and had a meeting with your staff in the neighborhood. Again, shared their fears and hoped for better control of sediment. The present WDR does not prevent you from addressing all of the other sources of sediment that come from logging. You have a sediment source document that's been out since 2011. It's well vetted. It addresses many sources of sediment. that are increasingly causing us problems. The logging is very, very close to us. There are over 600 acres out there. They just logged the whole headwaters for the second time since 1999. I ask you to please use all of your knowledge and all of your tools to address the sediment from all of the THPs that are out there that you have not approved. And in fact, you should do it to all THPs. We are desperate out there. We see the rainy season, and each time our fears have been realized, it has gotten worse. And we're the people that know. We know by the amount of sediment that we see left on the riverbank, left on the vegetation that is ever increasing, the consistency of that sedimentation. And we also now have a report, which I think Jeff Hales volunteered last time to get into from Jack Lewis, that does show that there are increased percent sediment in our storm loads. So I ask you please to apply those rules. I have another question to ask you, and it has to do with the federal and state anti-degradation policy. How is that being implemented on non-point source pollution? I am very interested in that. And I invite not all of the staff, all of the board, and all members of the Lumber Company to engage with us to find ways to better address the sediment. It is a very serious problem for us. One of the things we could do is store more water in winter per month. Some of us do that to a limited extent with the water supplies that we have put in. There might be more opportunity to explore that. And with that, I thank you all, and I will end on the note of the apples that are in front of you are from my farm. The big red one is my I call it my daddy's red cane. It's a color variation of an old-fashioned apple called Tompkins cane. And when we got a patent attorney in the family many years ago, the first patent he got was on the apple. The other one is a Gravenstein, Sebastopol, very famous for Gravensteins. Ours is a more color variation, a little bit later, because we're later than you guys are, and maybe slightly more time. And eat the first, and eat the second later. Thank you all very much.
I just had one comment to Christopher Greenley. I had the privilege and honor of actually buying apples from your dad. He said, did you want a sample? And I said, the box. And I was about it. I held it up, bang like that on the box, and split it. Three fours. And it to me. And it happened so fast, I was still wrong. It's like.
Thank you for sharing that, John. I appreciate it.
All right, I have one last speaker question. Felice, please.
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm speaking right now as an individual. I just wanted to share with you and call your attention
excuse
to what
me.
I believe is
excuse
a
me. Felice. Please state your name.
Okay. Okay. My name is Felice Pace. I live at Klamath Glen on the lower Klamath River in Illinois County. And I'm speaking as an individual right now. I wanted to call your attention to what I believe is an available solution to the problem of these industrial marijuana grows on public land, specifically on the national forests. And we have a lot of national forest land, as you guys know. And I have become convinced that these grows are a particular water quality threat. I think there's been some, I won't go into that. But anyway, these grows Most of you know, and some of you know, that I have been a forest activist and primarily a national forest activist for about 40 years. And I've logged thousands and thousands of hours on Forest Service roads, some of the most remote roads you can imagine. There are a lot of roads. I mean, last count, about 8,000 or so just on the Klamath National Forest miles of roads. So these groves utilize some of these very rarely used or unused roads. And they have gates on those roads, but a gate, and some of you I think know this, is no longer an obstacle. I mean, for one thing, I know 20 or so people that have keys that work on the Forest Service gates. But, you know, there's torches now and they're regularly used as well. And they can be made to use like they were open. But, you know, nobody else uses these roads except maybe during hunting season when they're open by the Forest Service. And these roads rely on access to get those materials. We've seen the pictures of, you know, the fertilizers, the rat poisons, all that stuff, the pipe in there. They got to have road access and reasonably close. And if we tank tracked a lot of those roads, the ones that aren't used, we'd lose some access, but I think we'd gain a lot more. Combined with a community watch program utilizing the resources of the people that live in the forest, we could deal with this issue, I think. And I call your attention to that. And as you know, I just want to mention at the end here that there is what's blocking that. The forests are doing transportation planning, and the main thing that is blocking that solution is the OHV community. They want access to all the roads. They really want it all the time, but they don't accept putting in these, you know, blockages that you can't get around. So that is the main obstacle right now, but I think we have to build you know, enough public interest in that kind of solution, which is real, to actually do it. And it's cheap compared to, you know, hiring law enforcement or more law enforcement. It's really cheap. So I call your attention to that today. Thank you.
Yes, you can.
Hi.
Good to see you too.
My only concern with that train of thought is that once again the law-abiding citizens are going to be blocked out of something for the people who are not law-abiding citizens.
I understand.
And as a person who utilizes Forest Service roads to cut wood with my family and to go hunting, and just a lot of times just to go for drives in the afternoon, I already feel like my rights are being taken from me because of the fear factor that you have to function under when you're in the woods nowadays. And so I struggle with that. I would much rather prefer, you know, a harder hand on those that get caught doing what they're doing and put, you know, some fear in them rather than us being the ones that have to live with the fear. So I really enjoy the Forest Service roads. My dad functioned as a deputy in the 1964 flood, and it was only through those Forest Service roads that the people in Trinity and Humboldt County were allowed to get around. It was those ridge roads that had been put in for the very reason of logging that allowed the folks to be able to get in and out of where they needed to go. So I struggle with that one. I hear your point, but I struggle with that one.
Heidi, you know, I'm not talking about those roads. You know, there are hunting camps. I know where hundreds of hunting camps are along the road system. And so does the Forest Service. In fact, when we've decommissioned roads, we've left them in when they go to major hunting. You know, and, you know, these roads are the mid-slope roads that have access to water. They're not ridgetop roads. I'm not talking about all the roads. There is a reasonable approach to this that addresses your issues, which I acknowledge, and some of them are my issues. You know, I mean, I use these roads for access too, for skiing in the winter, sometimes for fishing, and not so much anymore because those kind of streams I can't fish anymore. I'm too old. But I'm with you, and I think we could work out solutions, but we got to get the OHV people, you know, to be reasonable about it. You know, and we're just not going to have the amount of law enforcement. It's too easy to get around because they don't go home. 5 o'clock, you know, the regular patrols. So the law enforcement approach, I don't think, is going to be available to us any more than it is now at a higher level. That's
bad.
The organizations, Blue Ribbon Coalition, and so forth, in these transportation plans, are very much blocking these kinds of solutions.
Please, thank you.
Thank you.
I have no other speaker cards for issues in the public forum. Move on to the